Right now, we're going to go down to where it's a lot warmer than it is here, down at Sawgrass.
And we're going to be impressed.
Yes, we're going to be impressed. From the Golf Channel, Todd Lewis joins us. Todd, welcome into the golf shop.
Hey, glad to be here, guys. Is it cold there?
Oh, it's like 55 degrees, and the wind is biting me right now. And it's overcast. It's not fun.
Wow. Well, 75 and sunny here. Well, actually cloudy. So,
and very, very dry. And the conditions will, you know, even though they're expecting maybe a little bit of rain to maybe pop up, conditions for this weekend, very, very dry, very, very fast.
Well, the forecast looks like it's going to be a little more than a little bit of rain. They're expecting some thunderstorms to roll in around noon. Probably, hope we don't, but probably going to have some suspension of play some point today. So I do think that there's going to be enough water that's going to fall on the golf course today, if indeed the forecast is true, that's going to change the course. So, you know, we're just going to see what Mother Nature does.
Well, and speaking of changes to the course, the three big changes to the area between the two par fours and number 12 and the greens, what are you seeing as the substantive result of that? I mean, I really hope that 12 would be a super risk reward. These guys would be crazy aggressive. We'd see eagles. We'd see doubles. That hasn't really borne fruit yet. What are you seeing on the ground there that's substantive about the changes?
Well, I think players are now kind of easing into adding a little more risk off the tee on the 12th hole. For those who are listening, it's a shortened out drivable par four, reachable par four for many actually by just a 3-wood because it's so dry. Water to the left, you're kind of dead if you hit it to the right. And at the beginning of the week, most of the guys were saying that they're going to hit 5-iron wedge on this hole. But yesterday we saw a little bit of an uptick in trying to go for this green. And frankly, if you think about it, if you've got a good short game, why wouldn't you go for this green? Because if you pull it left and hit it into the water, then you're close enough, you should be able to go up, get up and down and get a par. But I'm not giving up on this hole on the weekend being a significant factor in deciding a champion here at the Players. I think something's going to happen there. I just got this gut feeling that as guys get more comfortable, that they're going to try to go for this green, and it's going to go one of two ways, positively or negatively.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird that we have guys that are hitting these driving irons, and, you know, we talk about the golf ball going too far. We talk about the green reading books that these guys have. Shouldn't they just outlaw these driving irons? I mean, Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, they're hitting these things off the longest par fours on the golf course, and they're still hitting mid irons and low irons in. I mean, it's insane sometimes to watch it, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, every other sport, amateur baseball, they use aluminum bats. Professional, they use wooden. Basketball, the three-point line, an amateur status in college is different than it is in the NBA. So football even. You know, football, the hash marks are different, you know, and little things like that. But here in golf, the amateurs play the same rules as the professionals, and I think that's cool. And I don't mind. You know, and because of that, the technology – with the driving irons, as you mentioned, the golf ball, whomever, you know, I want to have every advantage I can to play as good as I can. And I don't think that should be different for the players. I mean, look, they're not blistering this golf course. I mean, they're not. I mean, 9-under's leading after 36 holes. A very difficult golf course. You know, if it was 15 to 20 under right now, I'm with you. But they're not. So
yeah,
golf is
true.
Still hard.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we've got probably one of the bigger surprises. I mean, we know Vijay Singh can still play some golf, but at this level, we haven't really seen it because we've seen, you know, maybe the putter hasn't been working, or, you know, we know he grinds at it, but, you know, maybe the tee shots haven't been the greatest. Is this one of those weeks where maybe we go back to Stuart Sink versus Tom Watson at the Open Championship? I mean, could something like that happen where Vijay Singh actually still has a chance to win this golf tournament come Sunday afternoon?
Absolutely. Yes. Emphatically, Vijay Singh has a very good chance to win this golf tournament. I mean, he's still in his early 50s. I mean, he's not completely over the hill. He's still very fit. He's still has an understanding of his golf game. He still practices just about as much as he did when he was 30. I'm not surprised Vijay is there. Also, if you implement the fact that it wasn't too long ago, a few weeks ago, that Vijay won on the PGA Tour Champions. Now, it was a team event, but Vijay, I spoke to him yesterday, and he said, you know, winning did instill confidence and, more importantly, comfort, because he says, now when I'm on the leaderboard, I feel much more comfortable after winning. And he said that to me yesterday, which I thought was quite surprising, given he's in the World Golf Hall of Fame and is a former number one player in the world. So, yeah, and he also said, I'm thinking about winning this. I thought about winning this on Thursday, and I'm thinking about winning it right now. So you combine comfort, confidence, and foresight that, you know, he can be holding that crystal trophy on Sunday. Absolutely. I think Vijay Singh, if he can keep his game together, as far as nerves and mentality, he's right there with the best of them.
All right, well, we're talking to Todd Lewis, our good friend from the Golf Channel, and I'm curious, as we, you know, as we go into the weekend, Louis Oosthuizen, who it stuns me that he has not won on U.S. soil with that silky swing that's as silky as his new beard. That's one of the stories that's shaping up, and I think Ian Poulter being in the top five heading into the weekend after, you know, making this event essentially because of a vote recount on his points.
Hanging chads.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talk about 17 all the time. We've talked about it on the show before. We'll talk about it again. But what's the sizzle? What's the stake this weekend? If our listeners are looking for stories to really follow besides Vijay, where should they be looking? Is Oosthuizen a good story? Is this Poulter thing going to play out in an interesting way? Where should we be looking for the stories?
Well, there are a couple. I think it's interesting that PGA Tour announced a FedEx extension for the FedEx Cup over the next 10 years, and I can promise you, on the week that they made that announcement, that they don't want a guy who's got UPS on his shirt holding the trophy for the player. That's interesting. We mentioned Vijay. We mentioned, you know, Ian. You know, to be honest with you, I think Ian is definitely great for the game. If he wins, obviously, it'd be the biggest win of his career. I think that's interesting. I'd like to tell everyone about a story that you got to a 500 par, 4 off the lead, but Patrick Cantlay. He's a very interesting story, and here's his backstory. He was a decorated amateur, played the U.S. amateur, played the Masters, played the U.S. Open, turned professional. He had a hairline fracture in his L5 vertebrae in 2013, tried to play through it in 14 and 15, realized he couldn't, took the 2016 season off due to a major medical, came back, earned his card this year, so he's had to go through some physical pain. But what has happened to him off the golf course over the last year is horrific. His best friend, named Chris Roth, was also his caddy. The two were walking across the street in California, and a car with Chris standing in front of him, Patrick witnessed a car hit Chris in a hit and run and take off. And Patrick grabbed Chris, and he said that although his heart was beating, he knew he was gone, and Chris Roth died in Patrick's arms. And for him to come back from something like that and to be in the mix on the world's greatest stage in the crown jewel event of the PGA Tour, it's applaudable, not to mention getting over those physical issues as well. So I think he's a very interesting story, given everything that he's gone through on and off the golf course.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. Wow. And, you know, one of the things that we were interested in as we had the Wells Fargo Championship that's usually in the Charlotte area over in Wilmington last week is we saw the conditions there. We saw a golf course that was playing very, very demanding for the second shot. We saw some wind. We saw a little bit of weather. And, you know, the scores did not get out of hand there. It seems like some of those guys that played well last week in stages are playing well again this week. Like a John Rahm, like an Alex Noren, like a J.B. Holmes. I mean, do those guys maybe in the first couple rounds have an advantage with difficult conditions because they played last week on difficult conditions?
Well, it's not yet. Well, yes, in some ways, yes. But they're also playing well, and that is the big key. And I think John Rahm is a star in the making. It's interesting that he's a first-year PGA Tour member, but because he played at a number of events last year, he's not eligible to be the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, but the way he's been playing, he could be the PGA Tour Player of the Year if things keep going in that direction. How about his last 8 events? He has 5 top 5 finishes, including a victory at Torrey Pines. This kid, he's got tremendous passion and emotion, as most Spanish players do. He's heady. He wants to continue to grow. He spoke to me about reading Tiger Woods' book on winning the Masters back in 1997 and trying to understand and get into the head of the greatest player of our generation. And he plays without fear, which, you know, it is very much like Seve used to play. So I do look at this guy who's number 12 in the official world golf ranking right now to be a mega star. I really do. And he's likable. He's a fun guy. He's relatable. He's honest. So get back to your original question. Yes, guys that came from Wilmington to Ponte Vedra Beach, that they do have an advantage a bit if they played well last week. But I just think, like I said, they're just playing well. If you're striking the ball well at Eagle Point, you're obviously striking the ball well here this week as well.
Yeah, and as you say, with Rahm, he ticks all the boxes right now. I mean, he's one of those guys. But I'm curious, when you get him and you're not talking about golf, is he a compelling enough figure personally to be part of that village it's going to take to replace the Tiger factor? I don't feel like I know a lot about him. Is he an interesting guy?
Well, that's fair. I put him definitely right now as great young players in the Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas category, you know, that 22, 23-year age group of rising stars that have a tremendous future. Winning at Torrey Pines, you talk about Eagle Point being hard. That's a really hard golf course. I will say this. If he happens to grab the lead heading into Sunday, I'm interested to see how he reacts, because usually he charges from behind. He did that on Sunday at Torrey. But I'm interested to see how he handles what is a burden and a bit of a weight, which is a 54-hole lead on the PGA Tour, much less a big event like the Players. I'm interested to see what he does with that, because more than 50% of the time, the 54-hole leader does not win on the PGA Tour. If he can finish off a Sunday lead, then that really is a shining example that he is indeed not a good player, but a great player in the making.
You know, yesterday we have a good leaderboard, but yesterday as we started the back nine late yesterday afternoon, we had the potential of an unreal leaderboard, as we had Stenson, Day, and Mickelson that were all kind of working their way slowly up the leaderboard, and then the back nine kind of took its toll on all three of those players. We know Phil of late has kind of had the good and the bad and the ugly going on. He's kind of jumped up to leaderboards and then fallen down, and seems to be, you know, making some too many bogeys and some double bogeys. What about Stenson and Day? Are these two guys, you know, we know Stenson still has a knee problem that's going to have to get looked at, but he hasn't really had a whole lot of success so far. And we know Jason's Day struggle, but are these guys really on the cusp of maybe breaking out more towards the U.S. Open? Are we looking towards the U.S. Open and saying those guys that we expect from the top of the world rankings are going to be there at the top of the leaderboard soon?
Well, let's go through some superstar names. I'm a little concerned about Rory McIlroy's back now again, mm-hmm. Because that popped up somewhat out of nowhere. We thought that was something in the rearview mirror, but now it's an issue again. So that's a concern. Jordan, he says his swing is getting better, but we sure didn't see a lot of that this week. I know in the first round he hit only four fairways. I'm not sure how many fairways he hit yesterday, but he also said his short game was just miserable. You mentioned Henrik Stenson. He has had some health issues, not only his knee, but his back as well, and he's getting up there. He's 40. But I do like Jason Day right now. I think he is starting to trend a bit. He put all the emotional baggage, it seems like, now behind him with his mother, who in the beginning of the year was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer, given a year to live in Australia. He brought her from Australia to Ohio. They had surgery there at Ohio State. A tremendously now more optimistic prognosis for his mom, who seems to be doing well. And because of that, he is now focusing on his golf. He's mentally where he needs to be. He's working 7-8 hours on his game. I talked to him and his caddy/coach, Cole Swatton, and he said that they feel something building here, that 2-3 tournament run where he's going to be in the mix, maybe win some of those. So I feel like Jason Day is starting to go to the right direction. As a matter of fact, if there's a guy who I think is going to make a move today, it is indeed Jason Day, because he's been in the heat of the Players. He obviously is a defending champion. And like I said, I think he is starting to round the corner to get back in that kind of number one form that he had last year.
Now, who is Jason? Who's he playing with today? I'm looking.
Henrik Stenson.
He's playing with Stenson. Okay, which is a mixed bag right now.
So, what were you going to ask him? You were going to ask him about somebody?
No, I was just going to say some guys are on the course right now, and you've got last week's winner is down two after two. So, you know, Harmon's moving up. He's moved up 23 spots already after two holes. Is he somebody who we should be paying attention to?
Look, yes, absolutely. We're not handing out trophies on Saturday. Let's go back to Wilmington last week. Do you remember Dustin Johnson made the cut on the number?
Yes.
And he nearly was in the playoff, if not for Brian Harmon, knocking in a 30-footer on the 72nd hole. There's so much junk that could get in your way on this Pete Dye layout. I mean, you can see a lot of movement up and down. Don't look at this leaderboard right now and think Sunday afternoon on the back nine, these are the guys going to be playing for that Crystal Trophy. There will be a number of guys that will go north today, and some of those guys on that first page of that leaderboard are going to go south. So anybody, in my opinion, that is playing today still has an opportunity to win this championship.
Yeah, I mean, last week, I think the entire field after the cut was made was within, what, 7 strokes of the lead? This week it's 11 strokes of the lead. I mean, realistically, everybody has a chance. But, you know, if you had to say a number, how far down the leaderboard would you go to say realistically? I mean, if you're at even par, you got 9 shots, you got a lot of guys you got to jump over. We know how that goes. Mickelson talks about that a lot. He's like, you know, oh, I may be 4 shots behind, but I only have X number of guys to go over. It's the number of guys that these players look at. So, I mean, are we looking at maybe 3 or 4 under is kind of the number that a guy's realistically got a decent shot if he makes if he has a good round today?
No, I think even 1 under is going to be realistic. If those players have a good number today, let's say they can post like a 66, maybe a 65 that was posted, has been posted obviously here many times before, you're going to go north big time. I mean, you're going to have to play well on Sunday as well. If you're 1 under today and you shoot a 66, suddenly you're 7 under. I'm not looking for the leaders to be more than 2 or 3. I'm looking for the lead today to be around 11.
Okay.
So,
I love that.
We're back heading into tomorrow. So
awesome.
So
well, Todd, go ahead.
So that's what I'm thinking.
All right. Well, Todd, man, we appreciate you coming on with us as always. We look forward to a great weekend down there. Hopefully the storms don't roll through and we get it all in today.
You got it, guys. Good to be with you. Stay warm.
Thanks a lot. All right. Thank you. That's Todd Lewis of the Golf Channel, and that's the understatement of the year.